Hi, I'm Alexa. You can now hear PT Pinecast using me. Just say, hey Alexa, launch PT Pinecast. Or you could be nice and try saying please for once.
What is being polite dead these days?
To hear episodes, just say, hey Alexa, launch PT Pintcast.
Maybe throw in a please at the end.
Have a look around. There's a lot that's available now. There's a lot of evidence that this works. Just to have a bit of a broad mind about thinking how it may impact me and my practice. You know, have a think about what some small steps you could take within your organization or your practice. You mentioned Dave Petrino. He said once that no one's going to stand there and give you an invitation to innovate. It's something that sometimes you just got to grab hold of and you just got to run with it.
Hey, just a quick message before we get started here today. We've got a new podcast out. It's called NPTE StudyCast. Real brief, because all the episodes are real brief. Short, to-the-point episodes to help students prepare for the NPTE. Like one episode on heart disease, an episode on biceps tendonitis. All between 3 and 9 minutes. Just what you need to know. All right, so if you're looking to pass the NPTE, or if you're a practicing PT, you just need to bone up. You got a patient on your schedule that you haven't seen in a while. Take a listen. Recorded with clinical experts, free online, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are heard. NPTE StudyCast. Want to thank former guest and friend of the show, David Petrino, for setting up today's episode. Had a chance to talk to a couple of physios. Well, I should say one physio and one business professor from Down Under in Australia about telehealth. Just had a conversation with Rob Vining. So I wanted to release these two episodes back to back. This one done face to face in New York City over a couple of pints. The cool mix between the physio professor and the business professor on the different aspects of telehealth. These guys globetrotting when we had a chance to sit down with them and have a couple beers, globetrotting around the world, doing some grant and doing some lecturing on the topic. So I'm just really thankful to get 10, 15 minutes to bend their ear and take a listen about the insights that they had in telehealth. You're going to like this one if you're looking at telehealth at all in the future of this profession. Episode brought to you by Owens Recovery Science. They are a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training, and they have the equipment you need to apply it in your clinical practice, plus the evidence available. You can download, take a look at owensrecoveryscience.com. They're the leaders. So take a listen to today's episode. You will enjoy it.
Broadcasting to physical therapists around the world. Heard in over 135 countries with more than 1 million downloads and counting. This is the PT Pinecast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
May I introduce?
Please allow me to introduce you to.
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
We're back at Earl's Beer. Is it Earl's Beer and Cheese, or is it just Earl's Beer and Cheese? Last time we were here talking with David Petrino, an Australian, and like they multiply, so now we have more. So introduce yourselves to the audience, ladies first.
I'm Nicole Hartley, and I'm a lecturer and researcher at the University of Queensland in Australia.
Yep, and Professor Trevor Russell. I'm from the Department of Physiotherapy at University of Queensland.
So when you guys come here to the United States, it's a little unfair because you automatically get like 15 to 25 IQ points because your accents are so cool. Would my accent give me any credibility whatsoever in Australia? Does the American accent give me anything? Like any coolness factor?
Do you see our faces cringe just a little bit? When
what do you mean?
Like, I don't know. Did you say you were Canadian or you're American?
Does that help more? Probably, yeah. Especially this day today. So that's a cool combo you guys got going on. So what do you like? You know, business and background psychology,
yeah.
and kind of consumer,
yeah,
thought process, or
yeah,
consumer
decision making
and,
yeah,
physio.
Yeah. So where it works is that we do research together in the digital health space. So we're looking at how we can use technology, whether it's off the shelf technology or stuff that's specifically developed, but how can we use that to deliver healthcare better, and to deliver it to where the patients are in the home. So the research is around, does it work? Do people get better as quickly as whether you see them face to face? And a really big part of that then is, are patients engaged with the technology? And that's where Nicole's perspective from the business school comes in, and I'll let you take a run at that, Nicole.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice combination because it's not just about clinical outcomes. Clinical outcomes are very important. And I think with a lot of this technology, and particularly with telehealth, etc., we've seen that the clinical outcomes match on par with what we see in a face-to-face environment, if not maybe sometimes a little bit better, or But what we're looking at now is that implementation and people actually wanting to continue to use technology in ways that actually really helps them sustain their health over longer periods of time. And if you look at our aging population, it's more about how we can actually help them in their homes to, you know, stay healthy, etc. So it's not so more now about just the clinical outcomes. It's more about, okay, well, what's going to motivate these people to actually pick up this technology every day, monitor themselves, or engage with their health providers? And I think that's a really important value add as such. Yeah.
You guys mentioned like older adults, like you even specified that, you know, that group.
Yeah.
Whereas I think when you bring up the technology word, people pretty much, they discount older adults. Like my grandmother, like FaceTime, like she's 92 without a problem.
Yeah.
So I think we're, you know, if you discount that population, you're going to miss out.
Absolutely. Oh, totally. And it is. And they love it. Like in all of our research, the older populations love technology. They're never the barrier to implementation. They adopt it quickly. They see the benefit to it, and they embrace it pretty readily.
They do, and it's kind of like they want to connect back with their younger generations. Like we've done this research at the moment where it's more about people with COPD who are much older, probably in their 70s or 80s. They're looking at gamification in a way of actually connecting with their grandchildren, but on also getting well. So it's just going around in a circle that's fitting in with their social circle and their family life cycle, and it's really. Really cool.
I mean, it lines up with user experience, right? If you make something easy to do, they see a benefit in it, they'll adopt it. That's, I mean, you can pretty much apply that to any product or service out there.
Yeah, totally. So what we call that in a marketing sense, obviously, is customer value. So the value can mean a million different things. If it's a value of an elderly person who wants to connect more with their grandchildren, there's a way to do that. If it's value in the fact that I want to just not have to get in my car and drive all the way to the hospital to get my treatment every week for my diabetes, well then that's value, right?
Look how we consume content on demand.
Absolutely.
I'm not waiting until Thursday at 9 o'clock to watch this show. I'm watching it whenever I want on my schedule. And if you don't deliver that, you'll be ignored, which is the worst thing in business or marketing, being ignored.
Absolutely.
Or healthcare, I should say, as well. Just being ignored.
Absolutely. So it's understanding these drivers for why people want to use digital technology. But the flip side of that is also understanding the barriers. So what are the things that will prevent them from doing it? And if we understand those factors better, we can develop programs and we can develop technologies that navigate those barriers, you know, more effectively.
And I think as technology become more ubiquitous in people's lives, you know, about 10 years ago in psychology research, you used to see that technology anxiety model used to always be the barrier where people were just anxiety about using technology and what did it mean to use technology from all age groups, really. And that doesn't exist now. We're even starting to see in some of our research, it doesn't really have an impact at all in how... it's not going to be a barrier anymore. There's going to be other barriers. Like, does this fit into my lifestyle? Do I actually want to engage? Can I see the benefit in this?
As you were saying that, I was thinking like, well, 10 years ago, compared to now, technology sucked. I mean, it was great then, but now we're better. But that's where you learn. You fall down and then you get better.
Yeah.
You talked about either inventing or adopting things that are off the shelf. And that's something I actually asked before we started recording. And I do that a lot. I have to shut myself up. Well, first of all, what needs to be delivered, right? Like, let's go super simple. Audio, you need to be able to communicate with the person, whether that's either seeing or hearing. And where does it start from there? What needs to be delivered? And then we can figure out how it's delivered.
Yeah, so one of the things we teach our students is that you've got to go through a process of understanding what it is that you're trying to deliver before you choose a technology or a way of delivering that. And that's really, really important because... you know, to give you some examples, so if you're a psychologist and you need to deliver a service to your patient, then just a straight video platform is going to be fine because as long as you can see them and talk to them, you can see their body language and, you know, that's kind of how that works. But if you're a PT, you know, that traditionally uses their hands a lot for therapy or manual therapy, so forth, you're going to need a different solution to deliver that care. So it's really important that you, whenever you're looking at using technology to deliver care, you have to match the specific technology with the care that you need to deliver. And we take our students through a process of trying to tease that out of, you know, what are the specific things you need to do with this particular client type, and then what technologies match to enable you to do that. So the answer is kind of, there isn't one answer.
It's just like when I was in PT school. Well, it depends.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, and it should, right? So you can go with audio and video, as you mentioned, a PT, you know, typically wanting to use their eyes at least.
Yes.
Can you, I mean, are we going to get to the point where you can use your hands or, I mean...
maybe with the VR?
Haptics and VR, and I don't know.
I think, look, maybe in the future, maybe robotics will get good enough. It's certainly not there now.
No.
And if you look at what we do in PT, so just using PT as an example, a lot of what we do with PT is education-based. It's exercise-based. It's behavior change. You know, it's all of these sorts of things. If you break down what a PT does, only a small portion of it is hands-on. And those things can sometimes be achieved in other ways. So we've done, for example, some randomized controlled trials looking at treatment outcomes. And without putting our hands on at all using technology, you can get to those same endpoints in terms of patient outcomes. So, but maybe in the future, we'll have some cool robotics that kind of allow us to do more of the manual therapy side of things, potentially.
So you said that the research, you even said earlier, the research is already there saying that these interventions and using technology is showing great outcomes. So now we've got that out of the way, because that's what everybody wants to see first. Great, you've got a shiny new toy. Does it do what you actually want it to do?
Yeah.
And you know it does.
Yeah.
So where do things go next?
Yeah, look, the barriers are quite often, there's a few barriers, but clinicians pose a barrier. And quite often that's because there's a training element that's needed. First of all, there's a stigma. You know, some clinicians have practiced that way for 20 years. They don't want to change the way that they go about seeing their patients. So there's that barrier. But then there is an educational piece that needs to go in there as well. So quite often the barriers are more professional barriers than anything else. The evidence is an important piece of that, because clinicians are going to, you know, they want to do evidence-based practice. So the evidence is absolutely needed, but now there's this whole implementation era that we need to do more research on to understand why they don't adopt, or what motivates them to adopt, or from a whole of system perspective, what's needed from a system perspective so that this makes sense and so that the money works and the processes work and the, you know, and all of that works together. Because if you lack any one of those, the whole process can fall down.
Trying to convince people on both ends that this is going to be beneficial for you, for your care or for your practice.
Yes.
And being in education, do you see, are students super willing to adopt this because they haven't begun yet practicing? Are they hesitant because they haven't seen other people doing it before? Or?
Students love it, yeah. So students very readily adopt this. Back at UQ, we've got a student-led clinic there. So it's a clinic that provides services to the public, but it's our students that are delivering the care under supervision of clinical educators. And so they're getting it before they leave, and they love it. They love interacting with technology. They're digital natives, you know, it kind of makes sense to them. And we think that that's how we will get this change in practice, is through a generational change as much as anything else. The new clinicians coming through will be the ones that really pick this up in a big way. And so it's critically important that the students are exposed to it.
So when's this thing going to pop? When is it going to go from you knowing it working to, okay, this is now standard? Or, you know, what's the thing holding it back? Is it we don't know how to actually wield this weapon yet, or...?
Yeah, I think it is popping. It may not have popped yet, but it is popping. You go back 5 years and have a look at the amount of activity then and to what it is now. It's certainly, it's a term that people know now, and most healthcare organizations are doing some form of telehealth. It's a huge percentage of healthcare organizations that are approaching it in some way. Rehab's a bit slower because the complexity of it, you know, the hands-on thing, how do you replicate that? How do you engage people doing therapy in their own home? So there are some complexities there, but it's certainly, the awareness is much, much higher, and I think we're well on our way, particularly in Australia. I would say that with our socialised healthcare, it's a little bit, there's perhaps a few less barriers there to adopting this more broadly and faster.
We love building walls here in the United States. We want to put them everywhere. All right, so we know at this point the words, and we know the evidence are there. They're mainstream, past mainstream now. People, it's on the radar. Back to the how will it be delivered? Like, what will it look like? I mean, I know it's the future. Well, the present.
Yeah.
But what will this begin to look like in the future?
Yeah. In terms of PT, I can give you some examples in that. We've done some implementation research, which we'll talk about, I think, on this, because it's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we've done some implementation processes where we've set up clinics within our public health system there to deliver care. And in PT, the way that that looks like, just to give you a very specific example, is we have a clinic there which is all about providing services to people that are on surgical wait lists for spinal pain, so for low back pain, neck pain, and for complex orthopedics. So this clinic has been established as a screening clinic to have a look at everyone on that wait list, figure out who will benefit from surgery, but who might benefit from more conservative management, and then to provide a multidisciplinary management plan and care for that person. So the way that that works practically is we go through the wait list, we identify people, we do telehealth with them to do a patient interview with them, to have a look at how they move and how they perform. A judgment call is then made whether they're available, you know, appropriate for conservative management or not. And then we have PTs, occupational therapists, speech pathologists, psychologists, you know, medical team, pain management, all delivering care via technology into the patient's home. And that's done over video. So from a PT perspective, you'll be prescribing them exercises or teaching them how to mobilize better or what activities they need to do. Psychologists will talk to them. The nutritionists will talk to them. So it's all delivered in real time.
They're
video.
Already on the list, which is great.
Yes.
So you're looking at them when they're about to, they're on the conveyor belt to,
they're
to
on
the OR.
They're on the conveyor belt to the OR.
How can I get who's optimal for a chance at least of going there? That's cool.
And then we deliver that. Because Australia's very, very big country, very, very few people. So they're spread out. So we have issues with delivering healthcare to everyone because of our geographical size and distances. So with this service, they could be anywhere in the country and we deliver this into their home via video. And that's how that management we go about that. We'll obviously assess them over time. And if they're not progressing well, you know, maybe they'll return to that wait list again and end up, you know, having their surgery. But the statistics are very high. Over 80% of people have a very positive response to the service. And importantly, it's no different to when that service is offered face-to-face. So the telehealth offering gets the same patient outcomes as the face-to-face. That's what our research is starting to show. Yeah,
showing that physios are valued for what's between their ears and not necessarily just what they're doing with their hands.
Yeah.
That's what our professors hammered into us is make sure you want to get, you know, you want to be valued for this because
that's
what you paid for with time and effort. That's cool. So what's coming next with you guys? You guys are looking for...
Can I just go back to answering, adding something else
to your
last question about like what does this look like in the future? So it's kind of, well, even now, I think if I look at it from a consumer perspective or a patient perspective, it's really about monitoring. It's about the use of technology to have a little bit more ownership over your health. And yes, it can go to the extremes and lots of doctors will cringe at the fact that, you know, we are now more exposed to all this information about healthcare and people are trying to self-manage themselves in a way that where they ask Dr. Google what's wrong with them and then they prescribe their own course of medication or therapy or whatever it is. And that's a little bit scary. But the fact is now in co-creation with your practitioner through technology, you can look after yourself in your home, right? And that's where we all want to be. We want to be somewhere in an environment where we feel safe and secure and where we can just do our everyday life, right? So whether we're suffering from a chronic disease or whether there's something just semi-temporarily wrong with us, we have the opportunity now to work with co-creating your healthcare or your sort of treatment plan with someone who could be a million miles away, but it's very good at what they do. So that's a really nice thing. And it's about using technology in a way that helps monitor you and yourself and using the data well at both ends, using data well at the consumer end and using it really well at the physician end to make best decisions as to whether you need to escalate something or reduce it or, yeah. So monitoring is going to be a big thing in the now and into the future. Yeah,
you mentioned that when people, you know, start taking it upon themselves, that shows you that they're seeking this out. They value they want information.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
let's give them good information.
That's
versus
exactly right.
Bad information.
Yeah.
So they're seeking it out, and they're obviously open to using their phone or a laptop to get medical information.
That's
absolutely
right.
Based
absolutely.
By the highest Google return, which is frightening because if you know how to screw with some keywords,
yeah,
you can do that.
The PT Pinecast. We'll be right back.
Want to thank Brooks Rehabilitation, their Institute of Higher Learning, for sponsoring the show. Residency and fellowship opportunities is what they offer. Check them out at brooksihl.org. Also, hosting their fourth annual scholarly symposium that's going on June 22nd in Jacksonville, Florida. Information about the symposium can be found at brooksihl.org. Keynote presentation this year by the editor of PTJ, Alan Jetty. I'll be on hand doing some talks and some live podcasting. Looking for CEUs and to expand your knowledge base? Look no further than brooksihl.org.
And we're back. Let's get back to the show.
So you guys are doing some more research. Is that what we want to talk about?
Yeah, so implementation's probably where we're looking at now. So two things, really. So one is broadening the number and the diversity of technologies that we're looking at and how we integrate those technologies in a meaningful way. So how do we monitor someone, their health status in the home with high fidelity, and how do we use that information to make good decisions about when healthcare is needed, whether it's conventional healthcare or a telehealth offering? And how do we use all of that information then to motivate the patient to do the things that they need to do to stay well? So can we use some of the monitoring information we're getting to plug into a game, for example, on their phone, which motivates them to those health behaviors that are making them stay healthy, for example? So it's diversifying the number of technologies and how we use those technologies to deliver care is probably the next wave of research. The second one, though, is if the evidence is so good, why aren't people using it? And that's all about implementation. So how do we better understand how to embed these technologies into our conventional healthcare system in a meaningful way, that benefits both the patient and the system itself? And that implementation research is what we're doing a whole lot more of now, and that's Nicole brings a lot to the table in that sphere. In how do we understand from the consumer's perspective and the provider's perspective those barriers and those facilitators to that process? And implementation is something that's been done really poorly in the past. You know, we've had a shiny new toy and we've bought 100 of them and we've put them all around a hospital and they've kind of sat there in the corner and got dusty, because you've got to have all of those processes and training and so forth in place for that to work. So the implementation research is taking a very meaningful and systematic approach to having a look at who needs to know what, when, and who needs to be motivated in which way, when, for these things to work very well. So it's taking a very systematic look at how we introduce technologies into services to develop then better models for that people can copy and do it in their own organisations.
And a big piece of that pie is about organisational culture, right? So if you go into organisations, whether they're hospitals or other health providers, it's kind of like, well, technology can seem a scary thing in terms of, well, is it going to take jobs? Is it going to reduce, you know, how do I have to learn a new, you know, new shiny toy? But it's not about saying, well, this is the only way to do things. It's about, you know, technology is a tool. It's one of the tools you can choose to do your trade, and it always will probably be viewed that way. But the culture change has to come in the acceptance that this is a tool. It is an option, and it should be an option, regardless of price points or whatever it is that systems kick back on. And if it's the best option for your patients, it should be the best option that you choose. So,
So what are you guys doing now? You have funding. You're looking for funding. I have no idea how that works.
Sure.
It's all over my head.
So academics, we're academics. There's never enough funding, so we're always on that funding publication cycle. So we've got some good big research grants that we're working with at the moment back home in Australia. We've even got some grants in over here in the US and around the world to do various different things. But it's always about looking at that next thing, you know, trying to get the money to investigate it and then publishing the outputs, and more so, as I've mentioned, we're looking at that implementation side of things and trying to partner with organizations to help them to embed telehealth into their operation. So more and more we're working in partnerships rather than traditional grant streams because a lot of the basic research has been done. We know that this works. Now it's about figuring out how we embed it well.
And literally pay attention to those barriers.
Yes. Yeah,
and make it as easy to implement. Is it going to be fast for a little clinician to do? Are they going to have to learn, take a lot of time to learn it on their own? Or are you going to have to give them a reduction in their schedule to learn it?
Exactly.
Like, these are all like real barriers that if you don't overcome them, that shiny toy will sit there and collect dust.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But if it's a cool interactive toy, I mean, there's 6 Peloton bikes at my gym, and you can't get on them because there's someone on them all the time because they're fun.
Yeah.
And they're interactive.
Absolutely.
It shows that, like, I'll do it if it's fun.
Gives you real-time feedback, and you're
What if you could prescribe, all right, I want you to start off on this low-impact ride for a couple weeks, and then we'll bump you up, and I can put heart rate monitors on to see how your actual output is. I mean, we're at a time where it's the usability's super high, and it's easy. Even I can figure this stuff. I mean, I got watches that count my steps. Even I can figure this stuff out. It's exciting.
It is. It's a really exciting time in healthcare because we've got all of these tools that are available to us now. There's so many of them, so many different tools in different areas, that will give you information on movement or all of these different parameters. The challenge is, how do we make use of that meaningfully, that impacts health and that makes sense from a funding perspective?
And in terms of impacting health, it's actually that holistic view at health. It's not just treating, it's actually preventing also. So it's not just what's on the outside.
Which is hard because preventing it is not really that sexy.
No, it's not where the money lies for a lot of systems. So so they're not really supportive of maybe looking at that in the way that we probably should be looking at that, right? So, but that's where we need to start leveling up. This is where a time where technology can really help us get the data we need to actually look at prevention all the way through to treatment and make a real difference to people's lives.
All right, 2 quick questions for each of you.
Sure. What,
I understand this enough because you guys are super smart and you're breaking down. What am I not asking? What's the question that I'm not asking that I should be?
I think there's some fundamental things that we have to solve, not just in the US, but globally for this to really work well. One is funding. Funding's always difficult. You know, if the money doesn't flow, sometimes these things are, that you can have the best evidence and whatever, and it's just not going to work. So funding is one thing that we need to get right. All of these things are policy type things. So funding, there's things like licensure. So if I'm registered to practice here, in this state, I can't practice across the state lines. You know, if you're talking of telehealth, which is all about increasing access to care, all of a sudden you put a state line barrier in the way. It's difficult. And then you've got, not just licensure within a state, but within a country and more broadly than that. So while some of the greatest healthcare benefits you could probably attain with this technology may be to delivering to third world countries, for example, some of these things come and get in the way.
We'll ruin it with a law.
Yeah.
An invisible line.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. Fine. Yeah, equality would be my thing.
Same question. What am I not asking?
I think that was going to be mine too. It's about equality. Why aren't we actually ensuring that we're providing this or being able to get people to access to this kind of healthcare across the board rather than in those unique little spockets that kind of test stuff and it's there. It's supposed to be about convenience and it's supposed to be about accessibility. So we need to have the funding there that helps us actually put it to the populations that probably need this more than anyone else. Yeah.
Last thing I do on the show. It's a parting shot.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Rock Tape. More than just a tape company, Rock Tape is a movement company, tools and education for medical professionals. If you're looking to help your patients go stronger longer, check out rocktape.com. So this is like the mic drop moment. So the audience is PTs around the world because we've been heard in a bunch of different countries.
Yep.
They actually let us into other countries without those invisible lines. So what's the thing that you'd want the audience to know?
I would just encourage them to have a look around. There's a lot that's available now. There's a lot of evidence that this works. Just to have a bit of a broad mind about thinking how it may impact me and my practice. Have a think about what some small steps you could take within your organization or your practice. You mentioned Dave Petrino at the top of this podcast. He said once that no one's going to stand there and give you an invitation to innovate. It's something that sometimes you just got to grab hold of and you just got to run with it. And I think that's what my parting few words would be.
You're stealing my thunder.
Yeah, good luck.
Right?
Like, good luck following
that
one.
Yeah, I know, right? I was going to, take risks. You know, we all talk about innovation, and innovation is about risk-taking. It's about just trying it and seeing. And if you fail, that's fine. We just need to be more risk-taking in things that you think are going to benefit your patients, benefit healthcare in general, and we'll have small wins, and that will add to a greater kind of sort of growth in this space, basically. So take risks to provide better healthcare through technology.
Everybody benefits if we do that.
That's
right?
Exactly. Yep. Right.
I would love to extend the invitation 6 months, a year, even if you guys aren't in New York because you're globetrotting right now.
Yeah.
We can use digital technology to follow up and hear about this again and see where this thing is gone. I'd love to hear all the things that you've learned from right now until the next time we talk, and share those things that you guys get to see on a kind of global level with this. Appreciate the time. If people want to find out more about reaching you or finding out more about what you do, how do they do that?
Yeah, probably just Google our names. University of Queensland is the institution we're based at, so if you go to the UQ website, you can search specifically for our names. You can also search for the Center for Research and Telerehabilitation, and you'll find us there.
You can find me under the Business School at UQ, under Future of Health Interdisciplinary Research theme. So, yeah. Please get in contact.
All right, we'll get another round. But appreciate you guys hanging out and recording some pod with us.
Great. It was fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Our home on the internet. ptpinecast.com. Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting.
To providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
The PT Pinecast supports Team Gleason, led by Steve Gleason. Steve played for the New Orleans Saints from 2000 to 2008. He will always be remembered for his blocked punt on the night the Louisiana Superdome reopened for the first time after Hurricane Katrina. In 2011, Steve was diagnosed with ALS, a considered terminal neuromuscular disease. It is his mission to show that patients can not only live, but thrive after this diagnosis. In doing so, he hopes to inspire others to do the same. Steve and his wife, Michelle, formed Team Gleason. Their mission is to provide individuals with neuromuscular diseases or injuries with leading-edge technology, equipment, and services. Create a global conversation about ALS to ultimately find solutions and an end to the disease. Find out more at teamgleason.org.